My name is Judy Madison, and the subject that we're talking about today started out to be the ups and downs of motherhood and got changed to the ups and downs of parenthood, which may be a new word, I don't know. But in some ways it's going to stick with motherhood because there is a certain dynamic there that many of us as women have experienced in having been in that role rather solidly for a long period of time. And parenting does seem to be different. So I'm not trying to exclude men. On the other hand, we will be looking at it from my point of view, which is the only one I really have, I guess. But first, we're lucky because we have a child with us named Chris Forrest, who has a song for us.
Which he and I learned while traveling a long trip one time. It's based a little bit on some of the stereotypes.
Don't throw stones at your mother. She never threw stones at you. So don't throw stones at your mother. You'll be sorry if you do. When you were just a little boy, she tucked you into bed. So don't throw stones at your mother. Throw rocks at your father instead.
Nicely.
Oh, thank you, Chris. We are.
Music.
We probably better close with it.
More rock music.
Stay around and we'll close with that, too. This book was actually written right after my first child was born, shortly after. But I could still be quite in touch with the feelings of having been pregnant and so on. Within my body grows a child. I feel him move. I know him. I feed him with my every breath, my body and my thought. I wait to hold him in my arms as now I hold him in my womb. My heart embraces what he is and what his hopes in life may be. Within my body grows a child, an everlasting miracle. Well, my son wouldn't mind that poem. It has meter. I just discovered that. I have a son who's not happy with my poetry because it doesn't rhyme. Well, that little boy was born 10 pounds, 8 ounces. I was in the hospital, I think, 10 days. The doctor kept saying, oh, it's too hot to go home. Just stay a while. It was a little hot outside. And at one point, he became quite sick. He was about 2. And had to go to the hospital because he had pneumonia. And as you know, children at that size, they get very sick very fast. And he was well, you know, he lasted 5 days, and then he just turned into a maniac. He was so full of energy right away. It was marvelous. But at the point when I was taking him to the doctor to find out, this usually very talkative, active child was just so quiet sitting in the seat beside me. And it just overcame me. I don't think I wrote while I was driving, although I've been known to do that, but I probably wrote this in the doctor's office. And it's interesting that I wrote just the opposite of what I was experiencing. My child, a little sparrow, hops up beside me, chirping, chirping, snuggling in a nest of love, which I would have protect him, bobbing in delight to see the sunlight of the day, fluttering his frail wings as he tries to reach new heights, proud, undaunted, unafraid. Coy and cheerful, swooping down in mischief, mingling his laughter with my own, my little sparrow, my sheer delight. And I say to my boys now, I can't wait to be a grandparent because I just want to go through all that part again. On the other hand, you know, that at that same stage, you couldn't hold him down to change his pants because at about 2 years old, they just don't want to stay down for any period of time. I had to sit on him to change diapers. And that it was interesting to me that our second child grew into that poem. He was surely the coy and cheerful swooping down in mischief. He had a little glint in his eye all the time. And this one was written for him. What a wonderful little boy he is. He loves life, sand, snow, books and music, anger, teasing, hugs, and laughter. He enjoys it all. He lifts my spirit to a beautiful vista where living becomes adventure.
How I love this dear child of yours. Thank you for giving him to us. We will try to care for all his needs, to feed his curiosity, to stretch his sensitivity, to discipline his self-will, to love him and love him and allow him to be. The responsibility is so great, but thank you for this wonderful experience. And this child is an adopted child, and it's kind of neat, and you've shared that with me, kind of neat to know that that doesn't make any difference in terms of the attachment and the relationship that you have with the child. I just plain forget. There have been times when I've talked about giving birth to Michael, which of course I didn't do.
But you know, Judy, I think physically looking at the profile, he looks more like your demeanor. He looks more like her than she did.
That's interesting. People did say that it was really nice that when we first brought him to the nursery at church, one lady was overheard to say, "Isn't it wonderful? Now, first they had one that looked just like John, and now they have one that looks just like Judy." It just blew me away. Okay, bringing a new child home was an overwhelming experience to me, and I should suppose for all parents. And I can remember a neighbor saying to me when they brought their little boy home, all of a sudden he felt so responsible, and he felt that the world was so important. He was so much more involved in what life meant, because now he was, I suppose, protecting real life. And so I remembered what it was bringing that little boy home. "Lord, we are bringing a new child home to our family. We drive past familiar busy streets, people walking by en route to work, to the store, all of them involved in lives of great variety. This baby in my arms will be one of them someday. What will the world hold then? Dear God, bless this little child. Touch this small one's life with love and beauty and a sense of the wonder of living and of other people. Help us care and give, endowing each family member with love and protection and a personal sense of importance, so that every child is strong, able to fit into that future world and to appreciate life. I'm crying. The responsibility is so huge, and the promise is so beautiful." And I'm sure we all did that at some point. I just wept. It seemed so huge. And then as we move into the dailiness of it all, I found that I got tired from time to time. "Lord, I'm tired. So terribly tired. I'm exhausted driving cars full of children, ironing baskets full of clothes, scheduling days full of demands, fixing separate meals for family members, all on the move in different directions. At our house, it was hockey. I mean, I would be sitting at the kitchen table waving goodbye to my husband and my two boys, see you later, you know, and wondering, what is this? Is this a family? This is today's family life. Today's family must be free to go to new fields of learning where every person develops individually, where a home becomes a haven not of sameness in personalities and interests, nor of unimaginative togetherness, but a haven where each person's uniqueness is cherished and encouraged in an intimate, tender way. But Lord, I'm worn out. Where's my uniqueness? When do I get my opportunity for developing something besides fatigue or grocery lists? Being a martyr doesn't work, Lord. I'm not pacified by thinking that my family is my career, my extension of myself. The thought of their progress and their growth through my efforts does not always console me. The idea of being faced someday with an empty house is not always foreboding. It's appealing. I'm sorry, Lord, to complain so. I do feel taken advantage of. I feel fragmented by my family's demands. I haven't run across a creative approach to my routine since I used floral clay to repair my favorite planter. And then the plant died. Please forgive my short-sighted view of life. Please revitalize me a bit so I can create some adventure while I accept my responsibility. Not so much as a dutiful martyr, but more as a loving mother. I know you understand, Lord. I'm discouraged because I'm so terribly tired. Help me." I do think that's a large part of when we feel down. is that we can be tired and we don't get enough sleep. And goodness knows when the children are sick, you go through those periods. In fact, mothers very often cannot be sick. There isn't time. I don't know how it works out. It doesn't always work out, of course. But there is that ebb and flow, as with all things, as with any job. Sometimes we're joyous and sometimes we're tired. One of the problems has been that, and maybe I'm wrong, but it seems this way to me, is that we weren't allowed to say we were tired for a long time. That's less true now. But have you listened to the Jimmy Dean record at Mother's Day? Have you ever heard that? And he's talking, he's found an old something in his billfold that reminds him of his mother. And looking back on the fact that Mother did all of these things, and he's very grateful. And I think it's a nifty record in that way, because it's a real grateful kind of record. But at the other hand, it lays enough guilt to just make you just so tired again, because you feel like you must always be that kind of mom. And that's really hard thing. Women, I think, and you can share now, do you ever feel guilty about your mothering role? Is it ever a problem for you?
I think what was the most problem for me was one of my children, they're now 9 and 5 and a half. When they were smaller, until the time my son was 1 and a half, my husband was working full-time and getting his degree. I know what it's like to be a single parent. I was not widowed, I was not divorced, but out of necessity, 99% of the parenting fell on me because he wasn't there all the time. You know, it wasn't that he didn't want to be, he just wasn't. And some of this, yeah, you know, but I was so tired, you know, to be 100, you know, full-time mom and three-quarter time at least dad. You know, I can relate to people who are single parents because I know what it's like. And when you're tired and just don't want to have anything to do with them, and feeling so, I did feel guilty because I wanted to give them the nurturing. I didn't feel it was something I had to do, it was something I wanted to do. But still, you know, having that feeling when you're talking about women for so long couldn't say they were tired. I have a mother-in-law who raised 7 children who very much resents not only my ability but her daughter's abilities to say, God, sometimes I get tired. And we hear, you don't know what it's like until you have 7 children. I mean, the fact that I'm tired with 2 has no meaning. But I think that's kind of a contrast in that. Hopefully a step forward. You know, we can say, yeah, I am tired.
And I'm glad to hear you say that it isn't because you have to. It's because you want to do a good job. Yeah. Others? At times, we lived in an area that was somewhat, well, to me it seemed like the end of the world, but it was only 20 minutes from a major city. But there were things about the area where I felt isolated when the children were quite small. Now, it made for my children good friendships. They themselves learned to be such good friends, and I'm real glad about that part. But there were times when I kind of feel sorry for myself. Thank you for Mary, Father. It was such a cold and dismal day, and the children were impatient and bored, and I was not motivated to do my work. Then I remembered that Mary said someone once told her, when you feel frustrated by children and generally uninspired, do something for someone else. Mary said it always worked. So today I did an about face and we went to Great Grandma's. It worked. Great Grandma needed to see the children and me, and I needed to get out of myself and into someone else's life for a while. Thank you for the Marys in life. I think as I read that, of course it meant I had to leave the work alone and not clean the house. I was the kind of person who did always take a nap. In the afternoon. Actually, I pulled the phone right out of the, you know, the jack right out. And I had some friends who used to kind of envy that and kind of grouse around about that, that I shouldn't be doing that because they felt obligated to do their work. And I thought, my word, I need my rest so that by 5 o'clock I can still hold up. That's the worst time, you know, from 4:30 to 6:30. And I'm kind of glad I did that. But anyway, by going to Grandma's, I kind of entertained myself, too, as well as serving her.
Judy, I'd like to pick up on a remark here and
relates also to your seeming to have to go to grandma's. My wife often said, well, it wasn't because he didn't want to, he couldn't.
Well, he couldn't. I mean, if you're going to be supporting a family and going to school, there are certain times you have to be at school, and he's a program assistance analyst, and he was working on the accounting system for the Federal Reserve Bank. If that blew up, if it was 3 o'clock in the morning, he had to go down there. I mean, it was...
Yeah, I don't know about your spouse's situation, but I do know about mine.
Yeah.
I was made excuses for all the time.
Oh, are you saying that you felt that you should have been more participating?
Well, sure, but she always made excuses for me, so I didn't have to.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
I stopped doing that.
And there's a certain element, too, now as we move into kind of new ideas of parenting, where we who have been in charge of the home are a little reluctant sometimes to give up some of that power and to allow someone else to do a good job. It's a little threatening at times. Or to allow someone else to make a mistake. Oh, you didn't do it right. Oh, you know. That's not very affirming to the person who's trying something brand new and never done it before. Oh,
well,
we have to think
all the
time.
Husband in the kitchen is the classic on that, trying to make something or cook something. If the wife is hovering around and she has her own way of doing it, she knows how to do it right, she gets impatient. One, because he's crowding her turf and maybe threatening her a bit, and two, because he's not very efficient at it.
Sure, and doesn't
and
feel
creates tensions and frictions.
Yes. Oh, sure, it'd be easier to stay the same, wouldn't it? No.
See, this fourth child is really my first. And I'm making the mistakes now that my spouse made on our first. And that same kind of understanding we need to talk about together.
You and your spouse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. In my efforts now to be a parent to this fourth one, that's kind of what's happening, what Dave just said. I don't know how to do a lot of those things. I didn't practice with the first three.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping to now.
Sometimes, you know, picking up on it, I did stop making the excuse. For a long time I did, but then, you know, I just figured, hey, you know, they're getting it all from me. That's not fair to them. And it wasn't fair to my husband. It wasn't fair to anybody. And I just said, you know, out of necessity, if everything revolved around you, he wanted to go play golf or softball or something like that. Or he was going to go fishing, and I said, you know, I think Kari and Sean would really like to go fishing with you. He said, yeah. Now, my daughter at 9 years old, is one of the world's best fishermen because her dad, starting at age 2, spent time fishing with her. And I don't resent his time. It's nice because it gives me space. But because he's a kind of a hyper person, when he's out in boat fishing, it's the one time he's patient with himself and other people.
Oh, and with her too. That's marvelous. It's marvelous. I walked upstairs in the chalet this morning, and was my boys sleep right at the top of the stairs there, a little to the left, and there are no doors. Like at home, I can't close off what it really looks like. And I can remember 2 years ago putting a sign up right there that said disaster area. Do not enter at your own risk or something to tease them into picking up. And I was thinking to myself today, how was I going to be creative this year and get the same thing done? And then I remembered this particular piece. Father, the youth pastor talked about normal adolescent behavior, sloppy rooms and appearance, staying out late, rejecting authority, testing limits on behavior, and wanting to have secrets from parents. It was so true. And he said many parents worry unnecessarily about these manifestations of growing up. Oh my, how I've worried. You know how often I've prayed to you, pleading for patience, longing for the wisdom and knowledge of how to deal with my adolescence. Thank you, Lord, for people who understand and work with youth, for those who are informed and speak clearly, for those who understand their problems and our confusion and concern over our children, for those who are willing to give all the time and energy it takes to develop relationships with the young. Knowing more about adolescence will help me take these difficult moments in stride. I think I now will have a better perspective on my children. You have led me to help, Lord, and I am most grateful. And it was on a TV program, thank goodness. And I wrote it, you know, this again is one of those things that I wrote 8 years ago or whatever it was, and now I can turn back and use it myself. if we could have the empathy, it seems to me, that would help us a lot. But we forget what it was to be young. I was traveling home from a debate tournament when I was probably a junior in high school, and we must have been complaining in the back seat about life. I don't know what we were talking about, but the parents who were driving, the mother turned around and looked at us, and great big smile on her face, and she said, "Oh, kids, these are the best years of your life." And I thought, is that all there is? If these are the best years, because I didn't find high school to be so wonderful. Great times and all of that, but all of those emotional upheavals were difficult. I sure get tired of adults saying, "Oh, how nice it must be to be young." I don't think being young is so great. It seems to me everything's mixed up. Just when I feel good about school, I mess up a test, or I have to change my classes. I get excited about sports, and then I forget about curfews. I want to work, but I'm told I'm too young. I feel goofy, and I'm told to act my age. My friends are really important to me, but we let each other down too. My parents are great 1 week, and the next week they crack down. Being this age is confusing. I don't know why adults think I'm so carefree. I'm not. In fact, I'd rather have more responsibility like they do. But I can't decide what I want to do. I wish I didn't have to think about it. I hope I get through this stage pretty soon. Stay with me, okay?
I have strong feelings about that, that I think growing and learning is a kind of work, and it's got exhilarations, and it has fears, and it has disappointments, and it has anxieties, and it has satisfactions. And I imagine my belief is the content changes throughout life, but I don't think that process changes at all. Whether you're 5 years old, or 10, or 15, or 45, growing and learning is work of a sort, and it has all these other emotions that go around it. And so I get upset when people talk to kids and say, "These are the best years of your lives, or the most carefree." I don't buy it.
And you'd say that it goes on. It's,
I hope it goes on.
Do you think it's heightened in adolescence?
Yeah, I think the stresses, the tensions, the growing is more acute, therefore more painful, more exhilarating, more up and down. You know, the variations are stronger. But I don't think they stop just because you get out of adolescence or young adulthood.
You know, one thing I think is difficult for teenage years for parents and children is because teenage years, they're growing from child into adulthood, and their biological changes, their emotional and social changes, and generally that happens at the same time that parents are going through menopause. You know, so the parents are going through some of those same changes, and they're both in areas where each one needs extra patience and understanding, and that's where I think you get a lot of clashes.
And there's some literature that pointing out that these days it's also the same time, because of the age span that we live now, when parents are experiencing a squeeze from both sides, from the adolescents and from the aging parent. And so they're taking care of an additional group of people. And that would be a lot of pressure in the middle.
This talk about those being the best years of life, I for one would not like to go back and relive my teen years in today's environment. You know, I look at what the kids that are growing up today have to contend with, and it's no easy road. A friend of mine came against this kind of a problem with a teenage daughter, and I thought he expressed it very well. The daughter was kind of crying and bemoaning the fact that she said, "Dad, you don't know how tough it is being a teenager." And he looked at her and he said, she said, "You know, I'm being a teenager for the first time." And he says, "Well, no," but he says, "You don't know how tough it is being a dad for the first time of a teenager." And they have, you know, we've got different kinds of problems that we all have to sort out.
Yeah.
The best years are now. And it starts when you're three or four, teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Then we'll see.
Great attitude.
And adding what he said, last year our oldest grandson was 20, and I had really never thought about that teenage bit, because I was going back to when our daughter, she said to me, "Now I'm one of those." That was one of those. "I'm one of those," and I couldn't put it together. And she had had her 13th birthday, So she was then a teenager. But Chris last year was 20. And I said to him, that sounds good to you, doesn't it? Oh, yes, it does. So tomorrow we're missing his 21st birthday. And so I'm just wondering how he's going to be feeling tomorrow when he's 21. Then his sister, she missed her birthday. I mean, wasn't going to be home for her birthday in July 6th because she was leaving to go training the 23rd June. 21st of us, June. So we had her birthday celebration in June. And so somewhere along in that day, she said something about old teens, you know, gateway culture. And I said, well, Laura, I'll have to tell you, I'll get to your Aunt Barbara. I said, enjoy every year. When you're 17, be 17, 18. You never can go back. And when you're 20, be that. Because don't pretend that you're 25 or 30. Dress accordingly, act accordingly, because so many women, when they get that 35, they act and dress. I suppose been the same way, but they go back to their younger years. They're copying a younger person, and they've missed out maybe when they were 25 of being 25.
Yeah, that's something.
I don't
good.
Know.
So eager to grow up and
they
want to go back.
Because they wanted to grow, then all at once they're there, and that isn't what they want to be either. So I don't know how that works, but oh, she's going to manage out with it.
Reminds me of something. I've been searching for happiness for years. Some combination of things and people, knowledge, security, and success. But it doesn't work. Problems still come up. Boredom, losses, questions. I get cynical. Happiness is a bad joke. I begin to see that happiness isn't measurable, predictable, attainable. Life doesn't reach some sort of peak. Few events make us deliriously happy. There are better goals. Paul talked of being content in all. David, of knowing ourselves. Jesus said, satisfied, blessed. It must have something to do with believing that all events have meaning, all people are part of a plan. That the qualities of life, trust, love, truth, goodness, are present among us. Happiness surrounds an honest search for being, for meaning in our lives, and trusting that goodness and truth survives because it is of God, not delirious, but genuine, not a reward, but a way. And we are always trying to get a corner on it, aren't we? My parents mean well. They want to help me. They want the best for me. I'm sure they love me, but my parents don't understand. They see me through the eyes of their teenage years. Things are different now. Kids today have new problems. I try to tell my parents how I feel, but sometimes I can't. I end up not talking, or else shouting, or being sarcastic. Lord, I don't want to hurt them, but I have to be myself. Help my parents realize I can't always be like them. I can't tell them everything I do or say or think about. Help me too, Lord. Keep me from being unkind when I talk to them, and help me be a little more patient. My parents mean well. Maybe I can find ways to help them understand. I just think there's an irony to a child praying, help me be a little more patient. I hope they're thinking that occasionally.
Judith, you mentioned you're keeping the room clean with your boys and the sign of the door reminded me we visited a home that is a museum, in a sense. It's an old home with artifacts of the 1800s. And the family lives in that home with three teenagers. And we were touring one of the daughter's bedrooms, and it was spotless. And I asked the mother, you know, how do you manage this? Because I knew what our kids' rooms looked like. And she kind of laughed, and after everybody had left the room, she says, come with me. And they had modified the rooms so that the closets had Dutch doors, and she only opened the top. because it was level inside me.
What a great idea. Well, my one son was really a neat person. His dad was always that way, very orderly, you know. And so was this first son. And now it's just unbelievable. I can't. So I've decided this is actually just a stage. I can't believe he will forsake who he was those first 12 years. This just must be something that's not important to him right now. And I kind of take heart in the fact that his aunt was a person who didn't, I think her room was neat, but she didn't seem to know anything about anything around the house when she was young. And she's immaculate housekeeper now. So I guess it's a matter of interest. But I love that. I have been working for some time, part-time, and that raises a whole new set of problems, if you will, thoughts about parenting. It was a barbed remark, a rusty cut at me. She doesn't think I'm a good mother because I work outside the home. I feel both angry and defensive. Different points of view are not easy to reconcile. She can't fully understand how my work energizes me, how much happier a person I am, how I enjoy my family more when I work. Lord, help me not to make unfair judgments in return. Her work is equally valuable. Salary doesn't determine worth. She might feel slighted by unkind or thoughtless comments from people who demean the non-working mother. We both may tend to overlook the satisfaction of each individual's choice. I can and will forgive her because I also make hasty and unfair remarks. Help us talk more so that we better understand our respective needs. And I do think that's so important. We have moved into a time now when at least a lot of my friends, you see most of them having children who are older, are able to work part-time. And some of the ones who don't choose to do that spend a whole lot of time apologizing to the rest of us and being defensive and feeling inadequate. And I think that's such a disappointing thing. The preface to this book says, "All mothers work." Bold capital letters, "All mothers work." How true. And it was hard for me to write this and have to use this one non-working mother. I goofed.
My youngest sister has three children. First one is a daughter who just turned 4, and the last two are twins who are 16 months old. And she had to go into the dentist with her 4-year-old. The dentist said, "Do you work?" Meaning, do you work outside the home? And both Barb and the hygienist started laughing, and the hygienist said, "She has twins who are a year old," and he said, "Oh." And she said, "Yes." She said, "I came upon a quotation." She's got a twins or multiple mother group or something like that. That there was a definition of mother of twins is one who, when asked, "Do you work?" either laughs hysterically or cries.
Yeah, how true. I could have worked another 3 hours, not only because I had so much to do, but because I enjoy it. It's a good thing to like work, to see it less as duty and more as a contribution. It is more than self-satisfaction, Lord. This is a sense of being what I'm intended to be, giving, fulfilling my destiny, growing. It's not something I take lightly. I'm in touch with life in its best sense when I'm fulfilling my capabilities for the benefit of your world. Thank you, Lord, for my work. And of course, that is all kinds of work. I notice that as I move now into a possible new profession, I'm just carrying on what I've learned at home. It seems nurturing is very much a part of the ministry. The kinds of management skills that women have to have when they're running a home are really overlooked. We had some fellows at the church who couldn't understand why we'd want to put a woman on the personnel committee. And she manages all kinds of people, but it didn't fit for them. But even if she were not a manager in the business world, one has to be organized. Or otherwise the wash, you leave in the washer all day and you don't find it till 6 o'clock. You forget. Of course, I've never done that. Going back to two basic things, I think, that go into parenting, and then we'll just talk. The first one is the recognition that we're just human beings. That mothers, you know, Mother's Days are really uncomfortable sometimes. Depends kind of what church you go to and what the pastor's like. But there are some pastors who really kind of lay it on you. And I have a mother-in-law who says she just can't stand Mother's Day. It makes her feel so guilty, as we mentioned before. So that one does need to have that sense of only being human and not having to be all things to all people, especially those little people who are, in fact, so dependent that you get kind of used to that role. It's a very godlike role and hard to remove yourself from that. I'm confused. Some of you have heard this before. Sometimes I feel very strong, and powerful, and independent. I make good decisions. I lead other people. I sing. Other times I feel small, a tiny creature walking on a huge planet. Small steps, mistakes, weariness, fear. I create and try, and then I hesitate and hold back. I assure a friend, but also weep at my disappointment. I give up on life, but also smile. In all this, I sometimes categorize my feelings and choices as good and bad. But the fact is, I'm human. I'm not consistent, but I search to grow through any experience, to discover some little truth about life which will refill me and help me go on. I do not search alone. You are there, you know. You have felt too. You understand. That may be very basic to my whole life and view of life is this concept of children. Lord, I find myself unable to forget the children. The children who live in cement culverts. The children who eat other people's garbage. Who die of neglect and hunger and minor illnesses. Children who do not know family stability. The children who are born to be our hope. Who deserve food and shelter and clothing and love simply because they're living human beings. These children are my children, wherever they are, whoever they are, whatever their parents have done or may not have done. All children are part of my family because, Lord, all children belong to you. Lead me to help meet the needs of children everywhere. They cannot control their world. They're dependent on those of us who care for them. Children need us to nurture them so that someday they'll be strong enough to sustain this ever-changing world. Help me to love my family, to provide adequately for them, but also to remember my responsibility to the human family. Yesterday we were talking, I thought, well, gee, maybe I should have adopt another child. And there are moments when I realize that that's just pure insanity. But there's that in me that says, that job is never done, and you could do it again. And then I kind of work on myself and say, there are other things I can do to help children besides have them be raising them in my home. But that never goes away, that sense of responsibility to the living human beings, to the ongoingness of this species that we have, which we've talked so much about this week.
You could teach.
Oh, yeah. I've done that.
You all the time.
Yeah.
That statement you made just kind of reminds me, there was a time people used to ask me, why did you have a child? Or why did you want to have children? Because I know people who don't, and that's a live issue for many young couples, especially if they're both working or professional. It's a very live issue because it interrupts your life considerably somewhere along the line. And I used to scratch my head and him and her and sputter around some words, and finally what really came together was that, to me, that's part of what life is about.
Yeah.
Period. And I'm one for getting lots of different kinds of experiences, and I figured that was never an issue or question to me, and I just always knew I could have a child. Because that's what life is. That's part of a major part of what life is.
I
don't know any other response.
We have
that's what it is,
neighbors and friends who say they had a child. They're very active in the peace movement, and they've done tax resistance. And, you know, much of their life is acknowledging the pessimistic nature of life. But they, one of their reasons for having children is that they have hope for the world. And having a child is the ultimate sign of hope, that they are not giving up on the world.
Mm-hmm.
Nurturing children is a sign of hope, even in a time when we're not very optimistic.
No, I agree with you. It really is.
The point that you just said a while ago, that it's an ongoing thing. I can remember when a telephone rang one day, evening, and it happened to be the older son. And quickly, I can't remember how old Jim was then, but he wasn't connected with the home directly. And I remember that he came away from the home, from the telephone, and the point was, somebody was still calling Daddy. He needed help with his car and his skull somewhere. And so, regardless of what the age, you know, well, I know he had trouble. But it was it. I was the person at least called, but he was calling Daddy.
And the nice.
He still needed help.
A nice part of Holden, I think, is it's affirming the fact that we're all everybody's family. And so you, if your grandparents aren't handy, you can borrow somebody else's. And if your grandchildren aren't there, or you don't have grandchildren, which is something that happens in these days as you're talking about, there are other children to be loved and held. And as you were talking, there's something struck me too, that the first thing I'm going to put in my office is a rocking chair. Not only for the children who will come, but in a sense, for the people who all need to be rocked, because we're all children in the very deepest sense of it. And maybe that's part of the hope, is the recognition.
I think your point of humanity, of that we have limits as mothers and as fathers. The neat thing is to recognize that sometimes when you can't do what your child needs, or you can't be what your child needs, that there are other people around who can be and who can care for your child and give that child what they need at that time. I recall as I was growing up that although my parents were the prime important people in my life, that much of what I am now comes from teachers or relatives or other people that I've met along the way, so that while we do have a great responsibility, we feel that, we also need to be reminded that it isn't all our responsibility. It isn't our job to make it all come out right. That's, mm-hmm. that's God's job, and he has a lot of help other than me.
I learned that real well working. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We focus a lot of our attention on the teen years because we look at that as being a period where the raising of our children is most difficult. This man over here said something about people asking him why he had children. I think of this last few weeks looking at Christine and Morris and little Kai. Is there any doubt in anybody's mind what joy a child brings and how much joy it brought to that couple? Following the theme on a little bit further, I'm 54 years old. And but if I go outside without my hat on a cold day, my mother worries.
Right.
We never stop being jealous.
We have a favorite expression around our house, too. Once a mother, always a mother. I mean, I was working with people at the tables up here the other day, just I was going to dish out for everybody. I caught myself. And the neighborhood children have got me, you know, have you got your jacket on, Danny, or whatever it is? But they all understand.
20 years ago, David's father made a statement in a conference that I've never forgotten. It was on parenting. And it was that the children will learn more of love from the way the parents love others, or each other, than the way they love the child. Do you have any response to that? Or anybody else?
I could sort of give a slight example there. As a family unit, our children and grandchildren were there at my sister's. And she said she did something that I really would hesitate of doing because of a mother or mother-in-law interfering. But she thoroughly punished one of our grandchildren. Well, anyway, our son, who's the boy's uncle, he accepted it. Afterwards, you know, they were just as close. And he turned to me and said, he understands and he accepts it because it is someone he loves that is correcting him.
Mm-hmm. Can go a long way.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there. I mean, it's love.
Sure, and there's always reconciliation. I think that's important.
That's the answer. He turned because he was afraid maybe I would have checked, I suppose. I don't know. But he said to another, the reason that he accepted it is he knows it's somebody that loves him.
Yeah.
I teach a class for juniors and seniors on life relationships. Hmm. And I have a feeling as parents, we concentrate too much on the dirty clothes and the dirty room than all of them, the positives.
Yeah.
You know, the kids will always talk about how their parents suggest the dirty room and this sort of thing, and they forget all the good things. And I'm going to use that poem that you just read about, sometimes I feel so good and sometimes I feel so low, because that's high school kids. And they can understand that.
Oh, that's good.
I'm picking up on something about, you know, being able to make mistakes as a mother. One of my mother has all sorts of these little sayings that are, she had signs up for, you know, kind of like what you did, but she made little notes to reminders and everything. But when one of us would say, well, geez, that doesn't make a lot of sense, or that's not logical, one of her famous sayings is, I don't have to make sense, I'm a mother.
I have a friend who has a sign up in her house, ask not what you can do for your mother. No, what your mother can do for you, ask what you can do for your mother.
I think about what Paul was saying that my dad said once, and I think it's getting a consistency in a sense. If I tell my child I love him, I try to be fair and honest, and he hears me saying harsh things about other people, or, you know, chortling over cheating on the income taxes, or letting somebody down clearly and directly and things like that, that's going to raise some more questions. Well, what is a relationship? What is love? What are these words I hear on the one hand, these other deeds I see on the other?
In fact, that may be how he interprets the word, is according to what you do, not even know the other side.
Yeah, with the actions and the consistency in living one's life, communicates a great, great deal, as much or more than the direct things you say and do to the child.
Mm-hmm.
You're receiving of affection, not just from the son, but from another human being, gives that consistency of...
It's been rather painful recently. Last year I got divorced from Christopher's mother, and I worry a great deal about what he interprets from that and what he thinks that means about how people love each other or don't, or how reliable that is, and all those sorts of things.
I do.
Won't know for a long time.
Well, I think Christopher knows his daddy loves Donna.
I was talking to a young man in his mid-20s, and I was shocked as a parent because he was telling me it wasn't what his parents taught him, it was all the underneath, it was what was caught that was important to him and the family, that, you know, and it shocked me to realize how much goes on, the undercurrents, and how we really feel, and who we really are, that children get. I was really shocked as a parent.
Oh.
Really brought me up short.
Yeah, we don't look for that. I need to know what time it is because we're supposed to eat first lunch, all of us, if we can.
11:40.
Okay.
Oh.
Got just a little bit more time.
Mm-hmm. I'll bear out with what she said. I suppose it sounds like I'm bragging, but I will state that that I never had to pick up after the boys. And truthfully, I believe it was his father. I mean, there was nothing talk. It was a scene. He hangs up his clothes, the dirty clothes, like that. My sister gave each of my boys two wastebaskets. And those were for dirty clothes. Because, I mean, she followed through knowing what we were doing. And so the socks and so forth went into one, and their clean clothes were hung up. Supposing they were a shirt once, and it's in condition to wear again, they would put it on the hanger, and up it went a different place than from the clothes they had never worn. Did gotten them, left off the home that we would move into, did was old, an older home, and so we bought the clothes spots. Well, anyway, the clean clothes were in there, and on the rack back of the door would be the others.
Would you like a part-time job at my house?
And really, that's what he said. When he said about the bed, they would not make it like a girl, but anyway, they could have it up in their cover on top before they leave the school. I don't think I've ever told them to do it.
Well, I think you're right. They do observe, and that's a very satisfying thing when you see one of whatever it is that you're trying to help them learn, one of those things come and be. And or when your children are kind and you realize, oh, I hope they learned that from us.
Well, the only time that I was not to touch the room was when they were in university. You know, I mean, they had their workouts and things like that. And I'll take care of mine.
They wanted to then. Yes, Don.
Judy, I thought it was so beautiful. The children were coming down from the laundry singing Christmas carols. And they had their arms around each other. It was just pure joy in the sunshine.
Children are the hope. They really are.
Oh.